All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Thursday. Wait a minute. It's not Thursday. I got ahead of myself again. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Today is December 10th, 2025. And our top story this morning, oh, I just love it. I just love to talk about it. You guys may, I don't know if you heard this or not, but I like the shiny. Silver rising above $61, even briefly touching $62 last night. And there was much rejoicing. That's right. My favorite of the shinies is ripping here. This move in silver, it looks a little different than the rip we saw in September and October. What we're seeing here is not the shortage in London that we saw. We don't have the big backwardation. We don't have the spot price trading high above the COMEX price. We're actually back into backward or into contango now, where the future price is a little more expensive than the today price. That is where a functioning market would typically be. We have got the, what else we have? No big shortage in SLV. The cost to borrow SLV shares isn't skyrocketing. There's no zero shares available. So this isn't like the London shortage that we had a few months ago. Also, what I think is really going on here is this is silver doing the catch up to gold trade. Gold has just had a phenomenal run over the last 2 years. And earlier this year, the gold to silver ratio, the value ratio, how many ounces of silver it takes to equal the dollar value of an ounce of gold, hit not an all-time high, but it hit an astronomical high of about 105 earlier this year. And I remember saying, guys, this ain't going to stay here for long. Silver's going to rip. I've been piling into silver since then. And since then, we have seen silver dramatically outperform gold. And this morning, the gold to silver ratio is down, the last I checked, 68.8, down from 105. That is, silver is playing catch up to gold. Now, this is pretty interesting here because based on that gold to silver ratio, I think silver's got maybe a couple of bucks to go here, maybe a few more dollars, and then it's going to take a breather. And then that breather is either going to come in the form of another price slam, which we typically see right around options expiration every month. We've seen this pretty much every month since June. That's something my friend Bob Coleman has done an excellent job calling out on X. Follow at Profits Plus ID on Twitter if you don't already. Or maybe that means gold is going to start ripping again and we'll reset the clock on this whole thing. Gold will rip and then silver will play catch up again. I'll show you in the charts why I think that could happen. And then if that doesn't happen, there are some people that are out there screaming for $100 gold by year's end. Look, guys, that's like 20 days. You better hope silver doesn't hit $100 in 20 days. All right, that's all I'm saying. As good as that would be for me personally, that is bad for the freaking world. Something would be majorly wrong if that happens. I don't think we're going to see silver up to 100. But if we break through this resistance level in the chart, maybe silver $100 many moons from now is in the cards. We'll look at that one. Also going on this morning, Palantir. Apparently they build ships now. That's not my headline. It wasn't my idea. Palantir has just been given a $448 million contract with the U.S. Navy to develop something called ShipOS or ShipOS to help the Navy with their supply chain management and hopefully get submarines built a little bit faster. The funds are coming from the recently passed Reconciliation Act. They're going to use AI to build ships now. And you might be saying, what does Palantir know about building ships? Abso-freaking-lutely nothing. But there it is. Look, our shipbuilding methods in this country are way behind. We've forgotten how to build boats somewhere along the line. The last few, in particular, the last few surface ship projects have been an absolute fiasco. The Constellation-class frigate and then the two ship classes that made up the littoral combat ship, they were all dismal failures, way over budget, way behind schedule. A couple of hulls managed to hit the water with limited capacity. And then even the submarines, the Virginia class and the Columbia class, are both behind schedule. So they're going to use AI to try to fix it. Maybe it's going to work. Maybe there's certainly room for automation in our shipbuilding process. AI managing supply chains. All right. That kind of rhymes with the story about who was it? It was IBM was buying Confluent earlier this week. So maybe there's a little bit of that, or maybe this is just the Trump administration trying to blow into the AI bubble using funds earmarked for shipbuilding as an excuse to pump AI stocks. That is also entirely plausible. Either way, Palantir gives me the creeps. I'm sorry, guys. Palantir's CEO just strikes me as like a coked up Screech Powers with Joffrey Baratheon's personality disorders and access to a treasure trove of compromat that would make J. Edgar Hoover blush. Sit still and put down your sword, pendejo. Okay. Moving on from that one, we've got tech stock investors today are talking about how hedges are a waste of money in today's what stage moment for the AI bubble. Yeah, hedges are a waste of money. Okay, all right. Tell me it's a bubble without telling me it's a bubble. We've got China's DeepSeek is making news again. The information is out with a story that says DeepSeek's latest model was trained on Blackwell GPUs. You know, the Blackwell GPUs that the GPUs they're not supposed to have. What the hell, NVIDIA? How did DeepSeek get their hands on thousands of Blackwells? You told us you don't sell them to China. Oh, that's right. We all know they're selling this stuff to China, that they're playing stupid. They're selling them through Singapore and through Thailand. Here's another example of this. Jensen Huang, you're a freaking traitor. Oh, and there's that. But you know what? We're giving China access to the H200s now, which why would they buy H200s if they're already getting the Blackwells? And by the way, why are we letting China have the H200s? Why are we giving them that? Because wasn't the deal what the deal we were going to ease up on the GPU restrictions and they were going to buy soybeans? Then how come we've got articles today with farmers saying $12 billion won't be enough to cover their losses this year? That's the recently announced farm bill. That soybean prices are still falling on doubts that the Chinese will keep their promises as part of that deal. And even Jamison Greer, the U.S. trade representative, is out here saying China won't be buying the 12 million soybeans that they, the 12 million tons of soybeans that they promised to buy as part of that deal. Why are we giving the Chinese what we promised, but they're not giving us what they promised? Oh, that's right. Got to blow into that stock bubble. We've speaking of blowing into the bubble, Microsoft and Amazon both yesterday committed to spending billions of dollars on data centers in India. That's interesting because they can't build any more data centers here in America. They don't have any power. People are starting to push back. Even here in my own hometown, they tried to build a data center and locals got that project canceled. And so what are they going to do? They're going to take those warehouses full of idle GPUs that Michael Burry really wants a picture of, by the way, and they're going to ship them over to India, and they're going to crash India's power grid next. All right, that's going to be fun. We've also got SpaceX wants to IPO as soon as mid to late 2026. This is crazy. This would be the biggest IPO of all time at $30 billion, and they want to raise that $30 billion at a $1.5 trillion valuation. With SpaceX $15 billion in revenue, that would be a 100 times price-to-sales ratio. That's drunk by Elon Musk standards. And what are they going to do with that $30 billion they want to raise? Well, of course, they're going to build data centers in space. This bubble can't burst soon enough. Oh, my goodness. What is going on here? We've also got WingTech. The Chinese and the Dutch are fighting over Nexperia again this morning. I thought this deal was behind us. I thought they settled this. Apparently not. That story is flaring back up again. Maybe still trouble for the European automakers here. And last but not least, we've got a private equity CEO who's saying that secondary offerings are essentially the only thing keeping the private equity market from crashing. By the way, secondary offerings, that's when you take your stake in an existing company that you can't sell and you put it into a new company and you sell that to new investors. In other words, it's kind of like a Ponzi scheme. Actually, it's exactly like a Ponzi scheme. And it's the only thing keeping the private equity industry afloat. Well, that's special. Who had that one on their 2020s bingo card? Guys, we got a lot to talk about this morning. How's about we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance this morning. This is when I usually ask you guys to hit that big like button. And I ask you new guys to stick around with the subscribe button so you can come back tomorrow and have your coffee with the melon heads, because we do this one every single day. Right now, stocks are, looks like we got the S&P just barely in the red here this morning, down 4 points or 0.06%, essentially unchanged for the day. The Dow, meanwhile, is down 11 points, 0.02% in the red. Again, bouncing around right around the unchanged mark. And the NASDAQ leading the way lower, down 31 points or 0.13% in the red. When I posted the stream, we had two of the three indexes were in the green, hence the bull thumbnail. Now we got all three in the red. I guess I need a third animal. I don't know. Maybe we need the flatipus. Also going on here, the Dixie, the U.S. dollar index, down 17 basis points here at 99.07. Looks like a little bit of bearish dollar bets anticipated because the Fed is expected to cut rates today. Speaking of those interest rates, we've got the yields are pretty much going nowhere here. This is, I guess it's all baked in at this point. The 30-year yield is down a fraction of 4.807. The 10 years at 4.190, up a fraction of a point. The 2-year 3.615, also up just a fraction of a point. And the 1 month at 3.721, down a fraction of a point. No big moves. The only thing that's moved even one basis point this morning is the 5-year and the 7-year. The market's kind of just sitting here waiting for what the Fed says for any signals about future moves. But I found this article in Bloomberg kind of interesting here. Global bond yields hit 16-year high on fading rate cut bets. Now, we're going to go through this article, and then we're going to talk about why I think it's entirely wrong. I think they're getting the wrong conclusions from the same data that I'm looking at. Global bond yields have risen to highs last seen in 2009 ahead of a key Federal Reserve policy meeting, signaling concerns that interest rate cutting cycles from the U.S. to Australia may be ending soon. Yields on Bloomberg's gauge of long-dated government bonds have returned to 16-year highs, with money market bets underscoring that sentiment. Traders are now pricing virtually no more rate cuts from European central banks, while betting on all but certain hike this month from Japan and 2-quarter-point increases next year in Australia. Even in the U.S., where the Fed is expected to cut rates on Wednesday, the outlook is rapidly evolving. Yields on 30-year treasuries have climbed back to multi-month highs as investors eye a less benign outlook for monetary policy, inflation, and fiscal discipline. And I think in that sentence, Bloomberg is starting to sniff out what I'm sniffing out. Here's this gauge. This is this Bloomberg index of 10-year plus yields for the international bonds. And we are here back almost to 4%. We're at 3.91. The last time we were this high, November, what are we looking at? Okay, we were briefly there in the middle of 2009. Before that, the end of 2008, which was a great time, you might remember. A gauge of prices followed by the Fed edged up to 2.8% in September. That's the PCE inflation. Almost a full percentage point above the central bank's target. Concerns around the independence of the next Fed chairman is spurring some investors to build a risk premium into the Treasury's curve, and borrowings to help plug a $1.8 trillion budget deficit are also weighing on bonds. Again, you're getting warmer here, Bloomberg. A disappointment trade is unfolding across several developed markets as investors come to grips with central bank rate cutting cycles that may be ending soon. This is where they go wrong. I don't think they're ending soon. I think they're going to accelerate here. Long-term U.S. rates also face challenging conditions with an end to the Fed's easing cycle possibly in sight. And I think they're drawing the wrong conclusions. I think they're right to flag inflation. I think they're wrong to say the Fed is going to stop its cutting cycle. Honestly, I think the reason rates are going to rise here is because the Fed is going to increase their cutting. They're going to get even more dovish, and they're going to kickstart inflation once again. And people are demanding a higher interest rate in exchange for loaning money to the government because of that. I think the bond yields are rising here because the Fed is going to cut more, and the Fed doesn't control the long-term interest rates. The Fed only controls the short-term. Now, I've shown you this chart. I showed you this during my interview with Mario Aneco from Aneco 64 a couple of weeks ago. This is the 10-year U.S. Treasury yield going all the way back to the end of World War II. And you can see we had a 40-year cycle of increases in interest rates, culminating with the end of the inflation in the 1970s, in the early 80s. And then we entered the era of easy money. And you can see interest rates lower, 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 culminating with the VID and the ridiculous monetary policy that happened there. Ever since then, we have seen interest rates rise. And if you notice, this pattern that we've been in for the last couple of years, this pennant pattern here, that is a bullish continuation pattern, which means rates are going to keep rising. I think sometime in 2026, we're going to be flirting with 6% on the 10-year yield, and I think the market just cannot absorb that. Guys, if you notice those other red lines I drew here, these are 40-year cycles of higher and lower interest rates. And I think we are at the very beginning of a 40-year cycle of higher rates. And I don't think it's going to end just because the Fed cuts by 25 basis points. It's these little Fed cuts. It's trying to inflate asset bubbles with monetary and fiscal policy that is going to cause the inflation that's going to make people reluctant to lend to the government, which is going to lead to these higher rates. And they still haven't figured that out. They're still fighting today's war based on the results from the previous war. They haven't learned their lesson yet, and we're all going to pay the price for it. And I think that has a lot to do with why silver is ripping here this morning. Meanwhile, we've got Bitcoin is down a little bit here, $92,034. Bitcoin had a good day yesterday. Now we're off by about $673 as priced on Coinbase. We do have some interesting Bitcoin headlines this morning. Vivek Ramaswamy's Strive seeks up to $500 million to acquire more Bitcoin and repay debt. And guys, August called. They want their headlines back because Treasury companies borrowing money to buy Bitcoin, that hit its peak over the summer. I think this is a desperate move here. These Treasury companies are going to flop. And Treasury companies like Strategy, in my opinion, are the leading candidate for FTX this time. It should be just about any day now, to be honest with you. And we've even got this one. Eric Trump's America Bitcoin buys 416 Bitcoin worth $38 million. Blow, baby, blow. They're all trying to keep these bubbles inflated. Ain't gonna work. Now let's look over at the commodities board. And there is my big, beautiful gold and silver here this morning. Gold sitting out the rally, at least for today. $4,203 for spot gold. That's actually down by $5 or 0.12%. February COMEX futures are at 42.31. That's also down about $4.50 or 0.11%. But silver, check it out. Spot silver, $60.92. Overnight, we hit a high of 61.61. It's currently up 23 cents or 0.37%. But the big move was in those March COMEX silver futures. Look at these numbers here. Currently, $61.38. Overnight, we hit a high of $62.13. We blew right past 60, guys, up 55 cents, 0.91%. I like the shiny. We're going to look at the chart in just a second here. But first, we've got copper higher by about 0.9%. Platinum is down almost 2%. Palladium is down about 1.85%. And crude oil is lower by 0.6%, $57.90 for January WTI futures. All right, let's look at the price of silver here. And it is just ripping here, $60.91. Now, guys, a couple of days ago, we drew this cup and handle pattern. Somebody asked me to chart it out, and I remember getting this super chat. Somebody asked me what was the price target on that cup and handle pattern, and when I drew it out and I kind of, you know, just figured out what it was going to be, this is starting to look a little funny here, but I came up with the low 60s, like $62 to $64 was the price target, and I remember we were right around here when I did this. And I remember doing a double take and saying, that can't be right. $62, $64? No way. Well, here we are, guys. We got there in a hurry. And I guess the math just kind of surprised me at that point. Now, here's why I think we're probably due to take a breather here. Maybe there's a few more bucks left in this rally. What we're looking at here is the gold to silver ratio, the number of ounces of silver it takes to equal the price of 1 ounce of gold. And you can see earlier this year, we went up to 105, ridiculously high. Ever since silver has gone on this monster rally. Now, here we are down here at 69.07 currently. Now, I drew these two red lines here a long time ago. This red line at 75 was where I was planning on going to my local coin shop and trading some silver ounces for an ounce of gold. And I just haven't gotten around to that because I am really deep into a story that I'm currently working on that I hope to have published within the next day or two here. Before that or after that 75 level, I've also flagged 65. And there's a reason why I flagged 65. First of all, if you go back over the last couple of years, the gold to silver ratio at 65 has been kind of a resistance level. You see, after the silver squeeze in 2020 and 2021, that's where the gold to silver ratio bottomed out. And come on, stop messing with me. And after that, silver corrected, gold started to outperform for several years, and we went back up between the 70s and the 90s, even 105. So 65 has historically been kind of a resistance level here. You can see, or I'll say a support level. We saw the same thing back in 2016. Now, another reason here, if we switch this to weekly candles and we zoom all the way out back to about the 1980s, ever since the end of the Hunt Brothers era, 65, this lower of the two red lines, has pretty much been the average over my lifetime of the last 40 or so years, 45 years, if you want to be specific. We have spent some time below that, but 65 is about the average. You can see it was support several times. So I think the gold to silver ratio probably gets as low as about 65 and then catches a bounce. That means silver's got a couple more bucks of this rally before it takes a break and then either corrects lower or gold starts to rip and the gold to silver ratio goes higher from there. Now, the alternative is if the gold to silver ratio breaks below this 65 level and we start getting down in the levels here like the 30s or the 40s, where we very briefly went in September of 2011. Now, in that scenario, some of these crazy calls for $100 silver by year's end are not really so crazy, right? We're at $4,200 right now on the price of gold. If you divide that by about 30 bucks, if we go that low, that's $140 for the price of silver. All right. If at 4,200 gold, if the gold to silver ratio goes to 40, we're at 105 bucks. So I do think it's crazy to consider $100 silver by the end of this year. That's only like 20 days from now. But if we were to return to a GSR that's anything resembling where we went in 2011, then absolutely 100 bucks is on the table. I just think it's going to take a little longer than a few weeks to get there. And in my opinion, I think we probably bounce around a little bit more. I think gold has another rally outperforming silver, and then silver plays catch up again. I think we probably rinse repeat that a few more times, and that's how eventually we get to $100. Either way, guys, the government is going to cut and the government is going to print, and there just ain't enough gold and silver in the world for what's coming, at least not at these prices. Meanwhile, we've got this one from Palantir here. They're going to build boats. Okay. Maybe President Trump and Alex Karp had this like romantic end of Pretty Woman moment. And they're like, we're going to build ships together. Big, beautiful ships. Maybe that's what happened here. U.S. Navy turns to Palantir in a push to speed shipbuilding. The U.S. Navy is turning to Palantir Technologies as part of its years-long effort to speed up submarine production in a bet that the company's analytics capabilities can better expose supply chain problems. Palantir will supply its foundry and artificial intelligence platform in an initiative that's been dubbed ShipOS, or ShipOS. The company and the Navy said in a statement on Tuesday, the total investment was valued at $448 million. Again, that money is coming from the Reconciliation Act, that the bill that ended the government shutdown. The Navy is hoping Palantir Services will help speed up production of its Virginia and Columbia-class submarines, two programs that have been beset by cost overruns and years of delay. By enabling industry to adopt AI and autonomous tools at scale, we're helping the shipbuilding industry improve schedules, increase capacity, and reduce costs, said Secretary of the Navy John Phelan. Palantir said two major shipbuilders and three public shipyards will be the first to get the software, though it didn't identify them. Contractors General Dynamics and Huntington Ingalls are designing and constructing the 12-boat Columbia ICBM class, a roughly $130 billion program, and the Virginia class attack submarine fleet. Full disclosure, I own shares in both those names, General Dynamics and Huntington Ingalls. But what we're talking about here is they're talking about speeding up supply chain problems. And I don't know, maybe that could really speed things up. Let me see if I can find the exact quote here. Palantir. Oh, no, that's not it. Oh, man, come on. Give me the. Here we go. Trump's decision this week provoked an immediate backlash. No, that's not it either. Anyways, look, they're going to use AI to try to speed up shipbuilding. Maybe it's going to work. I don't know. Everything Karp is talking about here, they're talking about supply chain, identifying supply chain weaknesses. Okay, maybe that could speed up shipbuilding. Is that like the Achilles heel of this program, or is it the fact that we've underinvested in our shipyards and that we don't have skilled tradesmen in this country that you need to build these ships at scale? Either way, blow into that bubble. Palantir shares up 1.35% ahead of the opening bell, $184.56. Meanwhile, we've got tech stock hedges, a waste of money as traders bet on gains. What stage, guys? Hedges are a waste of money, apparently, now, says not too prudent traders. Option traders have weighed in on whether the run in artificial intelligence stocks is coming to an end, and their verdict is a resounding no, not anytime soon. That's on display in the derivatives market, where open interest in call options on the Magnificent Seven group of tech stocks is near its highest since March of 2023 relative to puts, a sign that traders are preparing for a move upward. That's also a sign that everyone and their brother has bought call options in the same seven stocks, which means who's left to buy. The market is way offsides bullish here. Buying tech hedges at the end of the year in the last year or two has been a waste of money, said Matt Maley, chief market strategist at Miller Tabak & Co. If the market rallies strongly into the end of the year, it doesn't matter if people are bullish or bearish. They're going to be buying stock, referring to institutional traders, never occurring to him that sometimes stocks go down. I realize stocks only ever go up, right? Just like in 2007, houses only ever go up. But sometimes that doesn't work anymore. On the buy side, investors echo that view, with the majority of the 39 global investment managers interviewed by Bloomberg News saying valuations among the Magnificent Seven stocks are not overly inflated. Fundamentals back to trade, they said, which marks the beginning of a new industrial cycle. All right, so let me just address this whole argument that fundamentals back the trade. Yes, big tech makes a lot of money. Names like Microsoft, their software is on every computer in the world, all right? They make a lot of money. Facebook sells ads to freaking everybody. Google dominates search and YouTube. All these companies make buku bucks, all right? They have cash flow, all right? So the valuations on some of the Mag 7 names aren't terribly stretched. They're pretty high. But also keep in mind, all these magnificent revenue numbers that they're reporting, all of their revenue is coming from cash furnace, privately held startup companies. Their fundamentals are dog shit. All right. OpenAI, Anthropic, Perplexity, Coherent, whatever. All these names, they are all money losing companies, and they lose money on a scale the world has never seen. And that is the fundamentals that is backing these supposedly strong fundamentals at the Mag 7. Yeah, you got a strong foundation that is built on quicksand, which means it's not a strong foundation. And by the way, guys, I made this video, the AI bubble in 99 seconds. I put this video out several months ago. And let me tell you, this video, the performance of it, it was a huge disappointment. It was one of my worst performing videos at the time when it was released. It was a total dud, and it was actually a lot of work to edit this video. The 99-second videos are a ton. They're a labor of love. It's a lot of work. But very quietly, over the last 2 months, this video has now become my third most viewed video on my channel. It's getting not a ton of views every day, but it's gone from getting no views at all to consistently getting about 800 to 1,000 views a day. And almost all of those views are coming from search, not from the algorithm pushing me out, from people looking for the AI bubble. All right, so let's try to make these two things mesh. How is it that hedges are a waste of time, according to the people who YOLO into call options, and at the same time, more people are searching AI bubble than ever before? That is a powder keg combination. Meanwhile, we got China's DeepSeek uses banned NVIDIA chips for AI model. The information says, oh, there's that thing that never happens happening again. Chinese illegally buying chips, inflating NVIDIA's earnings, while NVIDIA tries to hide behind sales to Singapore and Malaysia to conceal what's happening. Chinese artificial intelligence startup DeepSeek has relied on NVIDIA's chips that are banned in the country to develop an upcoming AI model, according to a new report from The Information. NVIDIA's Blackwell chips, their latest version. We're not talking about the H100s that everybody knows about. Now we're talking about the Blackwells here. Were smuggled into China via countries that permitted their sale, the report said, citing anonymous sources. The report said the servers containing the chips were dismantled before arriving in China. DeepSeek drew global attention in January when it debuted an AI model that was competitive with Silicon Valley's best at a fraction of the cost. The startup was funded by Chinese hedge fund Highflyer, which had amassed 10,000 NVIDIA GPUs in 2021 prior to U.S. bans on exports of sophisticated NVIDIA chips and other graphics processing units. By the way, that was the older versions, that 10,000. And by the way, after the export bans went into place, they bought another 40,000 of the Hoppers, the previous generation. And now they're buying the Blackwells. Earlier this week, President Trump granted NVIDIA permission to ship to China an older version of its AI accelerators, H200. An export ban on its more powerful Blackwell version remains in place. It's still illegal. Guys, NVIDIA has gotten away with this. Why? Because we got to keep our stock bubble inflated. That's why. If law enforcement was serious, if the country was serious about national security versus endlessly pumping asset prices, they would have raided NVIDIA's offices long ago and walked out with computers and boxes of documents proving that this has been going on. But they don't, because they want the bubble to blow. Meanwhile, Microsoft and Amazon bet billions on India. We're going to go through this one kind of quick here, guys. Microsoft and Amazon can't get their data centers connected to the grid here in the United States, and they've already bought all the chips for the next round of data centers, so they need to pivot. And apparently they're going to pivot to India. They're going to now bet these billions of dollars on India, which means they need to really quick get all these GPUs out of the warehouses here in the United States, where as soon as somebody takes a picture of these Blackwells sitting in boxes doing nothing, it's going to crash this bubble. So real quick, let's make investments in India. We can crash their power grid, and then we can ship all these GPUs from our warehouses into India before Dr. Burry gets his hand on a picture of all these GPUs doing nothing. Shout out to Michael Burry. Thank you very much, sir, for your attention to this matter. And SpaceX to pursue 2026 IPO raising far above $30 billion. This will be the biggest IPO in history if and when it happens. SpaceX is moving ahead with plans for an initial public offering that would seek to raise significantly more than $30 billion. People familiar with the matter said, in a transaction that would make it the biggest listing of all time. The Elon Musk-led company is targeting a valuation of about $1.5 trillion for the entire company, which would leave SpaceX near the market value of Saudi Aramco, established during its record 2019 listing. The oil major raised $29 billion at the time. Let's see here. There was an important number here somewhere they're talking about it. SpaceX's faster path to public markets is in part fueled by the strength of its fast-growing Starlink satellite internet service, including the promise of direct-to-mobile business, as well as the development of its Starship, Moon, and Mars rocket. The company is expected to produce about $15 billion in revenue in 2025, increasing to between $22 and $24 billion in 2026, one of the people said, with the majority of sales coming from Starlink. Just got to point out here, guys, $15 billion in revenue and a $1.5 trillion valuation. Yeah, 100 times sales. You're drunk, Elon. That is a ridiculously high valuation. SpaceX is an amazing company. They put things into orbit, and then they catch a reusable rocket that is the size of the Empire State Building. The engineering feat there is phenomenal, all right? But amazing engineering does not excuse you from the math of valuations. 100 times sales is obscene. SpaceX expects to use some of the funds raised in an IPO to develop space-based data centers, including purchasing the chips required to run them, two of the people said, an idea Musk expressed interest in during a recent event. All right, that's just stupid. Data centers, I'll say, data centers in space is a stupid idea. We have enough junk floating around in space. Every time somebody goes into orbit, they risk, you know, a $1 billion rocket being destroyed by a 15-cent wing nut that was dropped by a cosmonaut 50 years ago. Let's not put data centers in space and make that problem worse. I mean, they're already messing things up on the surface. Let's leave low Earth orbit out of the equation here. All right, so we're giving the Chinese the H200s. We're keeping our end of the deal. And now U.S. farmers say the $12 billion aid package won't cover losses. And this is a big deal, guys. What's going on with America's farmers? You know, they took the hit. America's farmers have been a human shield in this trade war. And they're not getting what was promised to them. And what they are getting is pretty paltry in response. U.S. farmers facing steep losses this year welcomed President Trump's $12 billion aid package announced on Monday, but said they would need more than that to fully offset low crop prices and lost export opportunities from his trade war. The aid will help farmers prepare for the next planting season, said five farmers and agricultural groups, four agricultural economists and three bankers, and a partridge in a pear tree. Yet they added that it is a fraction of farm losses and will not rescue the sagging farm economy. Farmers have been saddled with low crop prices, higher costs for labor and inputs like fertilizer and seeds. Meanwhile, exports of crops like soybeans have declined due to Trump's trade disputes. Farm losses this year range from $35 billion to $44 billion for the nine major commodity crops, including corn, soybeans, wheat, and peanuts, said Sean Arita, Associate Director of the Agricultural Risk Policy Center at North Dakota State University. So the $12 billion is going to help, but it is not going to offset the losses, which are significantly larger than that. And we got this one just this morning here. Soybeans fall further on concern about pace of Chinese buying. This is something Bloomberg flagged earlier this week, and this is something that is not going away. Chicago soybean futures fell for a fourth straight session on Wednesday, hitting six-week lows amid doubts that China will buy enough U.S. beans to prevent prices from losing ground in a well-supplied market. Wheat futures continued their losing run to a fourth session after the U.S. Department of Agriculture raised its estimates for global production and end-of-season inventories. And there's no end in sight, because we got this one in farm policy. A top Trump administration trade official on Tuesday became the latest to indicate that China wouldn't buy 12 million tons of soybeans like they promised this year, telling senators that the deadline instead could extend through February or March. Then why the hell are we easing up on the chip export controls? Why are we doing that if they're not keeping up their end of the deal? Oh, that's right, because we have to blow into the stock market bubble. That's why. Because the government is doing everything they can within the confines of what Congress has allowed them to do to keep this asset bubble inflated. Meanwhile, the fight between the Dutch and the Chinese, we thought this one was over. It ain't. Wingtech seeks to restore Nexperia control as chip feud lingers. I was really surprised to see this one this morning. Wingtech Technology has invited court-appointed custodians of Nexperia to discussions in a bid to regain control of the Dutch chipmaker and resolve an impasse that has threatened supplies of critical components for automakers. Don't they make it sound so positive? Look at how they put such a positive, happy spin on a fight. Wingtech has invited court-imported custodians to discussions. Oh, you're cordially invited to give me my GD company back. The outreach from the Chinese company, which owns Nexperia, was made to Guido Dierick and Arnold Quesson von Uchlin, whose name I probably just butchered, which were appointed to oversee the company after the Amsterdam Enterprise Chamber seized nearly all of Nexperia's shares. As the lawful controlling shareholder of Nexperia, Wingtech has made its position clear. The core prerequisite and fundamental basis for resolving Nexperia's current governance impasse is the restoration of Wingtech's lawful control and full shareholder rights, Wingtech said Wednesday in a statement. Alongside the court dispute, the Dutch government enacted powers to block or reverse decisions at Nexperia over concerns that Wingtech was preparing to transfer technology to China. The ministerial order was suspended last month in an effort to defuse the standoff and restart exports from Nexperia's facility in China. Despite progress on the political level, an internal feud has continued between Nexperia's Dutch headquarters and its Chinese operations, which accounted for about half of its chip production before the crisis. Amid disputes over financing and control, Nexperia has halted wafer supplies to the Guangdong facility. The standoff has created concerns of renewed shortages from automakers, which rely on the components. I thought this was a done deal, and apparently it's not. They're still fighting. They're just using nice, comfy, cozy, warm, fuzzy words in order to conduct that fight so they don't cause a panic in the auto market. And last but not least, a buyout CEO says secondaries are preventing private equity crash. Been warning about this one for close to a year now, well over a year now, actually. They are using Ponzi scheme-like tactics to hide the collapse of values in private equity. The CEO of a private equity firm backed by a group of ultra-wealthy European families gave a stark warning on the industry, saying only the booming so-called secondaries market is rescuing it from a huge downturn. Jean-Marie Laurent Josse, head of Brussels-based Cobepa, am I saying that right, said the long period of low interest rates had made buyout firms less discriminating or overly risky, and that the industry now needs to refocus on better investments and returns. Many private equity firms are contending with a difficult period of higher financing costs, scarcity of takeover targets, and problems cashing out of older deals. That slowed fund distributions and made the drive to raise fresh capital trickier. One rare bright spot has been soaring deal flow in secondaries, where specialized firms allow investors to cash out of unwanted private equity funds, and they allow them to cash out by raising money from new investors and then selling their investment to the new investors and then taking the money from the new investors to pay fake returns to the old investors. Yep, that's a Ponzi scheme. That's how that works. He's also critical of the direction the industry has taken over the past decade or so, with players becoming more like volume-driven asset managers who are less willing to go after riskier investments with higher returns. And the practice of raising debt based on net asset value in order to return money to investors, that's another Ponzi-like scheme, these NAV loans, where they're borrowing against inflated values of their companies and then using that borrowed money to pay fake distributions to their investors. It's the illusion of profit. It's actually debt. It's a gimmick and makes absolutely no sense, Josie said. This is the wrong way to address a true problem. Well, nobody saw that coming. Hey, I just want to say thank you very much to Mr. BTB Company says, here's to silver hitting 100 before year end. Normally, I'd say don't threaten me with a good time. Silver at $100 within the next 21 days would be catastrophic for somebody. I don't know who, but something's going to break. That being said, I like the shiny. I wouldn't mind this little guy. See this little guy? I wouldn't worry about that little guy. I wouldn't mind that little guy being worth $1,000. All right. Especially because I paid around $200 for that little guy. But that being said, $100 silver by year end, that's wild and that's dangerous. How about a nice slow grind to 100 over the next 6 months or so? That I could live with. Thank you very much, BTB. Appreciate the super chat, the support of the channel. And the same to you, Armando Reyes, who says, dump all U.S. bonds and treasuries. By the way, Europe was supposedly threatening to do that earlier this week. I couldn't confirm that, but I did hear that rumor on some lower tier news outlets. Look, that's what's going on here. People are realizing we're in a negative real yield environment for the foreseeable future. It's the only way the government can finance its ridiculous pile of debt and endless deficits, which means if you're buying treasuries, you're losing money adjusted for inflation. And if you're losing money adjusted for inflation, where do you go? That little guy. I wouldn't worry about that little guy. That's where you go. There just ain't enough gold in the world for what's coming, or silver. Thank you very much, Armando. Nacho Man Randy Savage, what's going on, sir? He says, thanks, community. Always awesome way to start the morning. I'm Jack Gamble, and I approve this message. Thank you, everybody in the chat. Thank you, everybody in the super chats, for having your coffee with the Melonheads every morning. You guys are awesome. Thanks again, Nacho, for supporting the channel. Innovative, sustainable solutions. Thank you, sir. He says, DeSantis gave a great speech on citizens' rights regarding AI a few days ago. Best line was, big tech is not trying to beat China. They're trying to sell to them. Amen, Reverend. I tell you, DeSantis disappointed me during the last primary. I had high hopes for him, and he totally flubbed that debate with Newsom. And, you know, in a rematch, it looks like Newsom would have cleaned his clock if that had been the ticket. But DeSantis is distancing himself from Trump once again. He sees the writing on the wall. By the way, the GOP lost the Miami mayor race yesterday. That's the first time in 30 years a Democrat has won that city. That's telling, guys. The GOP are starting to lose seats they've held for decades. All right. What Trump is doing, and in particular, inflating asset bubbles at the expense of Main Street, is costing the Republican Party big time. The Republicans are going to get their clocks cleaned in the midterms here. And DeSantis is smart to come out against this AI trade, because the AI trade is going to be used to beat Trump over the head in the midterms. And DeSantis will be the guy who warned everybody that that was coming. So I agree with that. And I also agree with that line there, that big tech is not trying to beat China. They're trying to sell to them. That is 100% what they're doing. And they are selling to them. They're just using third parties and smugglers to do it. Make no mistake, those chips are still being sold. That Chinese money is still making its way into inflating those NVIDIA earnings. They're just hiding it in Singapore. Thank you very much, Innovative Sustainable Solutions. Thanks again, Armando Reyes says, silver will be confiscated in the name of national security. What silver? That little guy? I lost that little guy in a boating accident. Yeah. Molon Labe, my gold. Let's just put it that way. Come and take it. No, they're not going to confiscate metal. They may try to do a repeat of 1933, banning the private ownership, and then people with huge hoards of metal in third-party storage will probably, because of the paper trail, be forced to sell it to the government. But government agents are not going to go door-to-door confiscating gold and silver. That just ain't happen. That's some Alex Jones shit, and they pump that in order to sell high premium pre-33 collectible gold that pays the salesman a higher commission at the expense of the buyer. So temper some of that. All right, temper some of that. Maybe in an extreme example, we get 33 again, but door-to-door confiscation never happening. Thanks again, Armando, for supporting the channel. Dave Liberator? Thank you, Dave. I hope I got your name right. He says, love the shiny, love the show. I'm Jack Gamble, and I approve this message. Thank you so much, Dave. I appreciate that very much. I, too, love the shiny, and although I might be biased on this matter, I love this show also. Nashville Pasta Man says, didn't the government spend $250 million on Obamacare websites? What happens when AI butts up against a $90,000 hammer? How do they program for grift? Shaking my head. The Obamacare websites, yeah, I mean, that's your tax dollars at work there, man. I mean, that's just how they roll. Who could have seen that happening? By the way, government subsidizing something to make it affordable. How's that working out? See also college loans and see also everything else. When the government starts launching affordability programs, that's when you know that thing is about to get really freaking expensive, because affordability programs are subsidies. And when the market sees that the government is going to subsidize something, the market gets the signal that it's okay to raise my prices because the people paying for it own a money printer. And so the price goes vertical, just like happened with healthcare and just like happened with college. So government affordability programs are the opposite of affordability. As always, guys, you take whatever they're calling the legislation, and then the net effect will probably be the opposite. The Patriot Act was unpatriotic. The Affordable Care Act made healthcare unaffordable. Do you see where this is going? Thank you very much, Pasta Man, for supporting the channel. Sean M. Thank you, Sean M. He says military parts are exceeding planned life cycle. Well, certain things, yeah, they're probably running them past their age. That would not surprise me. I'm not in the military. I'm somewhat removed from that complex, so I can't really comment specifically. I could tell you retrofitting of older ships. We were talking a lot about military ships today and about what Palantir was doing. We're going to be desperate for hulls here. If this kicks off in the South China Sea, which is looking increasingly likely, keep an eye on those Perry-class frigates that are sitting in mothball all over the country. Like if you drive over the bridge in Philly, you can see a whole big line of these Perry-class frigates that have just been sitting there for years. If we can't build hulls, maybe we can take the old hulls and we can put modern equipment in them a little bit faster. We haven't quite gotten to that level of desperation yet, but something tells me we could get there one day. Speaking of parts exceeding their planned life, bringing stuff out of retirement. That's what the Russians did with their tanks. I wouldn't be surprised to see the U.S. Navy do it. Thanks again, Sean. And thanks, Armando. Once again, says word to the wise, stop sharing on the internet that you have silver. It could be outlawed if World War III hits. What silver? Ain't no silver here. What? That's just an unfounded conspiracy theory by Twitter randos. Ain't no silver here, buddy. Thank you very much, Armando Reyes, for supporting the channel. Once again, John Pistone says 100 years silver to gold, 47-1, new era higher silver. All right, so you're going back further here, and there's certainly a logic to that. When I drew that red line at 65, I used my lifespan, the first half of my life, right? I'm on the back nine, if you will, of my life. So I'm using the front nine as a gauge to what we might do. You can very absolutely go back. I mean, if you go back in history, even more than 100 years, right? The gold to silver ratio, way, way lower than that, right? It comes out of the ground at something like 9-1. I think the historical, like throughout history average, has been something closer to 35-1, 47-1. Thank you for that data point of the last 100 years. If you go by the last 40 years, the average has been about 65-1. You can see how as time goes on, the gold to silver ratio is stretching a little bit higher. But remember, we're into this new 40-year cycle now. Interest rates are moving higher, contrary to what the Fed is doing. So maybe using the playbook of the last 40 years is no longer the right metric. So very good point there, John Pistone. And thank you, sir, for that data point. And thank you, Blank Johnson, for the blank message. Oh, he became a YouTube member. Welcome to the Melonheads, Mr. Blank. I appreciate that very much. Guys, just a reminder, use those free super chats, and I will read and respond to your questions live on the air for all you Melonheads. Thanks again, John, and or Blank, and welcome. Break My Wallet Motorsport says, not just China causing soybeans to fall. Recent EPA small refinery waiver grants have disincentivized renewable fuels production, and California low carbon fuel standard subsidies are not materializing. And so correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that affects corn, not soy, but it also adds to the losses of farmers. Absolutely. Now let's talk about that for a minute. Renewable fuel standards and corn and ethanol is stupid. We shouldn't be doing it. All right. All we're doing is gumming up the carburetors on weed whackers for everybody in America. And damn thing won't start on Sunday, ruining my freaking day. That's why I went electric on my weed whacker, by the way. And we're doing this to, it's a subsidy for farmers. If we're going to subsidize farms, let's subsidize farms. Let's not destroy engines in the process. All right. I understand we need a strong agricultural base. I understand farmers make up the heartland of the country, and I think they should be supported, especially because they are sitting here getting punched in the stomach and the balls by the Chinese in this trade war to try to rejigger the U.S. manufacturing base, something that doesn't really affect them personally, but they're willing to take that hit for the better of the country. And so I don't mind support for farmers. We support much stupider, lazier things. That being said, I think these EPA fuel standards and ethanol are just stupid and destructive. There's better ways to go about it. Thank you very much. Break my wallet for the Anik data, sir. Madison Hype says, what's going to happen in 2027 with China? All of the research I have read by military academics says after 2027, it gets harder for the Chinese to take Taiwan by force because of the demographic collapse going on in China, because of the anticipated economic problems that are coming to a head in China. After 2027, it gets harder. So that means before 2027 or during 2027, that's when the Chinese need to make the decision to go, no go. And right now it looks like the decision is go. They have spent the last 40 years preparing for this. They have built, at least in number of hulls, the largest surface fleet in the world. Our Navy is still bigger by total tonnage. We have bigger ships, but the Chinese have more of them. Everything I've read says 2027 is go time. I hope it doesn't happen, but right now it looks unavoidable. Thank you very much, Madison Hypes. Break My Wallet Motorsports says soy is used for biodiesel. I didn't know that. Thank you very much, Break My Wallet. I appreciate the clarification. So, okay, corn is used for the ethanol thing, but soy also goes into biofuels. Not aware of that one. Appreciate that. Learned something today. Thank you very much, Break My Wallet Motorsports, for making the melon heads just a little bit wiser. Duke Dookie, the double D, says, what does property tax look like on a 50-year mortgage? I don't know, and I don't care because I don't want 50-year mortgages. It's feudalism. That's what a 50-year mortgage is. You never own your land. And look, property taxes, it's already feudalism. Shout out to my buddies Travis and Mitch over at Real Estate Mindset who are taking that fight head on in Texas, talking about making property taxes unconstitutional. Don't threaten me with a good time. If you own your house, you own your house. You shouldn't have to pay the government to keep your house or to rent your own house from the government. Then you don't really own it, do you? They do. That'd be feudalism, yo. Thank you very much, Duke Dookie, for supporting the channel. And again, 50-year mortgages, let's just not entertain that notion. Thank you, though. I appreciate the super chat. And thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melon Heads this morning. Appreciate all the generosity in the super chats. Thank you also to my magnanimous Melon Heads on YouTube, Patreon, and Buy Me a Coffee for supporting the channel. Links down below. Hey, guys, I got something big coming out in the next couple days. I've been working on this for more than a year. It's not what you think it is. It's not something I typically cover on the channel, but I think it is a huge story. Keep your eye out for that over the next few days. I hope to be done with that soon. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for the YouTube algorithm. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. I love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.